Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Greetings, humans. You have entered the command zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Jubilee, Jubilee, Beast, 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 Jean Grey, Cyclops. Cyclops is always doing this where he's like, no, my eyes. It's like,
dude. It looks like it hurts him when he does it.
Here's
a question. How does, like, Cyclops, the laser shoots wherever he's looking, right?
Yeah.
How does he ever miss? Have you ever looked at something and missed?
They have to be moving really fast. Be like, oh, darn, I can't move my head fast enough.
But he seems to miss constantly.
He's got to, like, press the little button on his visor,
it's like, I was trying to look at that, but I looked at this other thing instead.
Also, like, every time he takes off his glasses in, like, the show and the video games or whatever, it's insanely powerful. Yeah. I can't believe it's like, oh, here come our biggest enemy. It's like, dude, just take your glasses off and just stare at them for 10 seconds.
I think we win. Just stare in their general vicinity.
It's like, look, we'll hold your head in place and we'll use you like a cannon terminal. Anyway, what's up, everybody? You're watching / listening to the Command Zone podcast.
We are now turning into the X-Men comics podcast.
Yeah, clearly we are very qualified to talk about this subject. Kessler out there is just shaking his head, being like, these guys know nothing. I'm your host, Shimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai. So we're in the middle of it. Commander Ikoria, Commander 20 season. We are doing our deck upgrades, our budget deck upgrades. We're happy we can finally talk about this one because we've had to hold off until the main set Ikoria was previewed because, well, this is the enhanced evolution, the Sultai Mutate Commander deck. And this was really one of the calling cards for this year's Commander set in that the reason they wanted to tie it to a main set is so that the main set mechanic could be used in the Commander product.
Right. Remember when Energy was in Kaladesh and it was like, man, wouldn't it be cool to build an Energy Commander deck? It was like, well, there aren't enough cards. But now because the Commander precons are coming out at the same time as the main set, they can actually use one of the main mechanics from the set into a precon Commander deck, which is really exciting.
Yeah, so this is the Mutate deck. Pretty cool. We're going to do what we've done with all the decks, which is talk about how to get it up to speed and playing with regular decks with just few additions for a $25 to $30 budget. So you can cheaply and quickly get this ready to go against quote-unquote real decks.
10 cards out, 10 cards in.
Yep, but before we get into that, you're going to want to purchase these decks. You can go to cardkingdom.com/commandzone. That's our affiliate link. Whenever you use it to purchase Magic product, singles, anything at all, really. It doesn't even have to be Magic-related. Anything from their site that you purchase using the affiliate link will directly help to support our channel and all of our content. Obviously, there's a lot going on in the world right now. Some of Card Kingdom's operations have been reduced, so please check on their website to make sure that they can fulfill your order in time. But if you're listening to this at some point in the future when the COVID crisis is over, then they'll be back to normal, and hopefully everybody will be back to normal. At any time, using that affiliate link will help us out.
Yep. And another big sponsor of the show, as always, is Ultra Pro. You see their playmats. We use them all the time. They are also the ones that are going to be helping out and making awesome stuff to theme your decks around these new mechanics and these new card arts. And they've got awesome stuff always on the way. And again, like Josh said, with Card Kingdom, things are a bit different now with the COVID crisis, but that doesn't mean that you still can't support all the Ultra Pro product you might find in a store right now or in the future when they're back to normal as well. So a big thank you, as always, to Ultra Pro for helping us deck out our stuff and make it nice and safe and protect our cards.
And the final way to support all of our content, probably the easiest way at the moment, is patreon.com/commandzone. You can contribute to our stuff directly. You get a bunch of perks depending on what tier level you're at. You can hang out with Jimmy and I in our Discord server. We're in there all the time these days.
Yes.
Answering questions and just, you know, generally musing about Magic and the X-Men constantly. And you also get other perks like getting to see game nights before anybody else. All kinds of cool stuff. Really is a lean time for a lot of people. So if you do have the ability to support us on Patreon, we do super appreciate it.
And a quick plug, content is obviously the thing that everyone's watching right now. And Josh and the team are doing the post-production for the EDH Rec cast. That's all of those guys over at EDH Rec. They do an awesome podcast. And Josh and the team have now spruced it up with some top quality, high level animations and the format. I mean, how would you describe it? We've leveled them up. It looks great.
Visually, it looks really, really good. Their topics have always been awesome. We're just trying to like raise the visuals up to that level. And yeah, you're right. Everyone's spending a lot more time at home these days, rightfully so. So staying safe, you know, self-quarantining, what is it? Social distancing.
Yes.
This is what we should all be doing. And you need more stuff to watch. And EDH Reccast is another great thing to watch. Also, we have a ton of bonus content that's been coming out and is going to continue for the little bit of the future here, because there's so much product being announced, so many cool new cards being revealed. So make sure to subscribe to us on YouTube, hit that notification button, subscribe to the EDH Reccast as well. That's pretty cool. Oh, we forgot though.
Oh, yeah.
Back to Patreon. We do shout out one lucky patron every single episode. So, man, we almost missed you, but we remembered.
That's right.
This episode is dedicated to
Joe Lussier.
Or Lussier. Probably Lussier. Joe, you rock.
You rock, buddy.
All right, let's get into it. The Sultai Morph and Enhanced Evolution Precon
Mutate.
Quick
mutate.
Upgrade guide. Same as with the rest, 10 cards in, 10 cards out, total budget of around $25. As with the others, we're just not going to touch the mana base. It'll play fine with the mana base as is. Obviously, if you have shocks and fetches and stuff like that, put them in.
Yes. Okay. All right. So there are four new cards that can work as commander, and two of them are partners. But we're going to talk about the one on the front of the box first. It's Otrimi, the Ever Playful. It's three and Sultai, so black, green, and blue, for a 6/6 legendary creature Nightmare Beast. It has the first instance of what we're going to call Mutate. It's a new mechanic, and it says Mutate for one black, green, and blue. If you cast this spell for its mutate cost, put it over or under target non-human creature you own. They mutate into the creature on top, as well as plus all of the abilities from under it. And Otrimi itself, the text on Otrimi is Trample, and whenever this creature deals combat damage to a player, return target creature card with mutate from your graveyard to your hand. Okay, should we talk about how Mutate works real fast before we jump into the other ones?
Let's just simply, we're going to go into it more detailed later, but yeah, basically, remember, you can only mutate onto non-humans, and then you pick, we'll keep it simple, you mutate onto a card that doesn't have any other mutate cards onto it, right? So then between the two, it's going to get all the abilities of both cards, but only one of the power and toughnesses, whichever one's on top.
Mm-hmm.
So Trimi is a 6/6, you're usually going to put it on top, but if you happen to mutate on something that was like an 8/8, you'd put that card on top.
Because it still gets the abilities of what's on Otrimi's card.
This is basically like the fixed or fair version of Host Augment from Unsanctioned. And I think Mark has said so, or I don't know. Anyway, this is how I think about it in my mind. And the difference here is that normally you would think the power and toughnesses add together, but they don't. So you only get one power and toughness. And you can mutate onto a mutated creature. So you could get a stack of like four or five cards if they all had mutate except for the one non-human. Yep. But you'll still only get one of the power and toughnesses out of all that. And basically you choose based on putting it on top and bottom. So listen, it's going to be more complicated than that when we really go into it here in a second, because it seems very simple. And then you start getting into like, what mechanics happens about this? What about that? And it gets crazy.
Yeah, you're basically putting two creatures on top of each other. They're going to get all the abilities, but it's going to keep most of the text from the top creature in terms of the CMC as well as the power and toughness.
Okay, let's talk about the other commander that's by itself. There is a partner pairing. It's Zaxara, the Exemplary.
Just like the pronunciation you had, I'm sure.
Zaxara likes X's. There's two in there. Okay. It's one in Sultai, so one black, green, blue. 4 mana total for a 2/3 Nightmare Hydra, legendary creature, of course, has Death Touch. And you can tap Zaxara and add 2 mana of any one color to your mana pool. And then it says, whenever you cast a spell with X in its mana cost, create a 0/0 green Hydra creature token, then put X11 counters on it. So if you cast any spell with X in its mana cost, you get an XX Hydra.
Equal to X.
That's pretty crazy. Just tack on like a 5/5 onto your fireball that did 5 damage. That's a simple case, but obviously. That's, and Zexara taps for 2 mana, so adds to whatever that X is going to be by quite a decent amount.
Yeah, and X cards are very, there are a lot of X Hydra cards, Hydras that have X in the cost. So obviously Zexara wants to be friends with them. It is a Nightmare Hydra itself, but that's a lot of value.
Pretty cool Hydra tribal 3 color. I like it.
Yeah, it's a 4 mana, add 2 mana, so it's similar to a Mana Rock of sorts, but this is also a creature, and that gives you a big bonus anytime you cast an X spell.
You know a good X spell in Sultai? Villainous Wealth.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah, give me all your cards, and then I'll just take a 10-10 Hydra alongside it. Why not, you know? All right, the next two are the partner pairing of the commander deck, so that means that you can put both of them in your command zone and account as their... well, basically both your commanders, but they can only partner with each other. So the first is Ukima, Stalking Shadow, a 1 blue and black legendary creature, Whale Wolf. First time you've ever heard that. It's a 2/2 that partners with Kazur, Ruthless Stalker, who Josh will read in a second. And Ukima, Stalking Shadow, can't be blocked. And when Ukima leaves the battlefield, it deals X damage to target player, and you gain X life, where X is its power. And this is a 2/2. So if this just dies, 2 damage to target player, and you gain 2 life.
Unblockable 2/2. Unblockable is important because its partner, Kazur, Ruthless Stalker, is 3 and a green for a 3/3 human warrior legendary creature. It says partner with Ukima, obviously. And then it says whenever a creature you control deals combat damage to a player, put a +1/+1 counter on that creature. Works well with Ukima, obviously.
Yeah.
Unblockable just gets bigger, and as it gets bigger, Ukima is going to then, when it dies, deal more damage and gain you more life.
Yeah, I like that a lot. Obviously, all the partner commanders that we've talked about so far work very well with each other, but that doesn't mean that they don't work well by themselves or might have other synergies around. But Ukima is a card that is just by itself a 3-mana 2/2 that's going to gain you some life incidentally and do some damage when it leaves the battlefield.
Yeah, and Kazur is going to pump all your creatures that are dealing damage. +1 counter themed stuff is probably what you want.
Yep.
Interesting. Let's talk about everyone's favorite, the
stats.
All right, this deck, again, it's Enhanced Evolution, the Sultai Mutate deck, has 29 new cards.
Nice.
That's a lot of new cards.
That's a third of the deck right
That's
there.
That's crazy. That might be the highest number we've ever seen for new cards in a deck. Makes sense because it's going with the Mutate mechanic.
Yep.
There are 53 reprints in the deck plus 18 basic lands, so 71 total reprints, but 53 that we really care about. The other stats in the deck are ramp cards. 13.
Holy moly. 3 of them are lands, like Myriad Landscape. And this deck particularly, we've seen in the other decks, the Mardu one has all of these signets that go along with the colors. This deck does not have all the signets, and for good reason. It is a deck in green, so it does not necessarily need them.
Right. It has other ways to ramp that aren't artifacts.
Mm-hmm.
There are 8 card draw spells, nice. So pretty good, close to the 10 that we usually recommend. There are 3 board wipes.
Also makes sense if you're mutating a bunch of creatures on top of each other, you don't necessarily want to wipe the board.
But 3 is a solid number.
I mean, it's still enough, right?
Yep. Single target removal, there's 9.
Hey.
This deck can interact. That's a lot of single target removal. There are a lot of reprints from the main Aquarius set in this deck. Again, because of the mutate mechanic. So there are 12 reprints from the Aquarius main set in this deck. Which I don't know if that's a plus or a minus.
Yeah, I think it's just going to be one of those things where if it helps make the deck function better, then great. Because they obviously created some new, like for instance, you won't find Otrimi in the standard set.
Right.
But you will find some of the cards in the deck in the standard set and not the other way around. So it's interesting. They obviously did it to make the deck flow much better and do the thing it's trying to do.
Yeah, I'm not sure how to evaluate that. As a player, I guess I'll be a little disappointed when I then open those cards in a booster pack, or will I be? It depends on the cards, I guess.
If you're drafting them, maybe not.
Monsters with mutate. There are 15, including Otrimi. Mutate helpers. So these are...
cards that benefit the mutate theme. So there's a card that's Silent Arbiter, which says no more than one creature can attack each combat. If you're mutating a bunch of things on the one thing, obviously this is a card that, quote-unquote, synergizes with your deck.
So there are 4 mutate helpers. Listen, the numbers we care about, ramp, card draw,
single target removal,
wraths, those all look really solid.
Yeah, and again, props to WotC. They, I think, have done a much, much better job, especially since the first iteration of decks,
Commander
decks, in terms of making these balanced and also fun to play against each other. But more importantly, like, easier to take out of the box and play with someone and actually have a game.
All right, let's talk about deck value here, something everybody always pays attention to. We want to note, as we have with the other decks, that we're recording this before the decks have been fully revealed to the general public. So when we note the value, this is the value before the full deck lists are known. Obviously, all the cards that get reprinted in this deck are going to go down in value as soon as everybody knows they've been reprinted. So it's just not, we're not able to look into the future. So,
yep. And this does not take into account, again, any of the cards from the main set or any of the new cards because we don't know their prices yet.
Right. So as a result, this deck's total value is a little bit lower than the others. It's $92.17. Still reasonable, especially considering how many of the reprints are actually. We can't factor them in. They're from the Aquaria main set.
Yeah.
So it's got less reprints than the other decks, but still $92.17 worth of value. The sum total of all the $2 plus cards is, there's 17 of them. That's $69.73.
And four of those cards are $5 plus cards, and those add up to $30.96. So obviously a lot of value. Four cards taking up almost half the amount of value of the sort of the whole shebang.
Again, I think if you took these stats and just put them next to some of the other decks, it would look like it's less. However, because there are more reprints that are from the Aquaria main set that we can't check right now, I think that number is actually going to be close to the other ones. It's hard to tell, obviously.
Yep.
Let's talk about the notable reprints. These are all the cards that are worth more than Sol Ring, basically, that are $5 and up. And again, these prices are from prior to the deck reveal, so keep that in mind. Propaganda is the big one in this deck. It's about $12.
At the time of recording.
At the time of recording. That's a good one, a card that goes in a lot of decks.
Yeah, and a card that I've seen go up and up and up because obviously it's just a good card. And it, I think they even printed it at Uncommon, I think was the original. But those rarity ratings don't really make a difference in the Commander sets because it's not like you're opening a booster pack and you have a higher or lower chance of finding it. The card is going to be in there.
I mean, that's... worth noting, though, because it's been reprinted in the past and it'll usually go down for a little bit and then climb right back up because this is just a card that goes into a bunch of blue decks. If you don't know it, it's two and a blue for an enchantment. It says creatures can't attack you unless their controller pays two for each creature they control that's attacking. Attacking you. Obviously goes in a lot of decks. Okay.
Yep. Arcane Signet, a card that was originally the Brawl pre-cons and everyone realized they wanted one, is back here, and that card was sitting at $8, but... That's going to go right down, thank goodness. But
it's in all five of the decks, so. Yeah.
But again, this is the type of card that will slowly climb back up over time, so it's nice to be able to get that now.
This is a card that's going to go in a lot of Commander decks. Like 80% of your decks are going to want Arcane Signet, so that's a card you can never have too many of, right?
Mm-hmm.
The next one is a card you mentioned already, Jimmy. It's Silent Arbiter, 4 mana for an artifact creature construct, a 1/5. It says no more than one creature can attack each combat, and no more than one creature can block each combat.
From Conspiracy originally, one of our favorite sets.
Obviously good when you're building one giant monster.
Yeah, exactly. And especially if it has trample. Finally, the last one is the Planeswalker of the deck. It's Nissa, Steward of Elements, which is one of my favorite designs for a Planeswalker because it has X in the mana cost. So it's X, a green, and a blue, and it comes in with X loyalty counters. You can plus two it to scry two. You can zero it to look at the top card of your library. If it's a land card or a creature card with converted mana cost less than or equal to the number of loyalty counters on Nissa, you may put that card onto the battlefield. And the minus six is untap up to two target lands you control. They become 5/5 elemental creatures with flying, and haste until end of turn, they're still lands. So the ultimate isn't game breaking because there is a way for you to cast Nissa for the ultimate cost fairly easily in the types of decks that can run this card.
It does just smack for a lot of damage, though. Yeah. I've died to the ultimate before, and obviously it works well with Zexara, who wants X spells.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so the stats as far as who you should run as commander, that's the next thing we're going to go over. So how many creatures in total are in the deck? There's 39.
Yeah.
We talked about it earlier. There's 15 mutate cards, mutate monsters. There's four mutate helpers or payoffs. And then spells with X in the mana cost, there are 10.
Yeah, that's actually really surprising. Normally, we found that in the sort of the new generation of precons, they tend to lead a little more towards the lead singer as opposed to sort of giving you options, because Zexara obviously cares about casting cards with X in them, and having 10 of them in there, it says like, hey, there's actually a direction that you could take this deck if you wanted to go the X route.
Yeah, because 15 mutate cards versus 10 X cards
yeah.
is, you know, obviously there's a little bit more mutate, but it's not a lot. It's not like 25 versus 10, which we've seen in the other decks. Mutate yeah. seems to be a theme that, like, they're really reaching to make it work, because 15 is not a ton.
Mm-hmm.
Otrimi gets mutate cards back out of your graveyard to your hand, and so you want enough of them that that's going to happen, right? So you can get that value.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think, yeah, there's a little bit of an argument to be made between Zexara and X spells and Otrimi and mutate. Obviously, I think Ukima and Kazur are just off the main plan.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there are 39 creatures in the deck, so this is going to be a creature-based strategy. And another argument for Zexara is that even if you don't care about the X spells part, having a mana rock in your command zone is a very valuable thing, especially because it's adding 2 mana and there are a lot of big spells in the deck, so maybe that is going to be important.
It's also a Death Toucher, so it's going to thwart attacks against you. A lot of people aren't going to want to swing into it.
I think the reason that Otrimi clearly wins this battle, though, is because it has an alternate casting cost out of the command zone. Very powerful, because the card itself costs 6 mana to cast, but you are almost never going to do that in this type of deck.
So mutate also doesn't just necessarily need other mutate cards. It just needs creatures, which is why there are so many creatures.
Yeah, on, non-humans.
Right, just needs a non-human out there to be able to get extra value off of. So I think, yeah. And also, Hydras have been around for a while. We've seen them a bunch. Mutate, this is the first time we're ever seeing it. Yeah. So we're going to build the deck around Mutate regardless.
Yeah, and also there's a lot of ramp in the deck already. So Zexara's ability is a little redundant in the command zone. So if there was like no ramp in the deck, then maybe it'd be like, well, you kind of need Zexara, or it really skews the 10 cards we would put in and take out.
All right, let's talk about the best cards in the deck that come in the deck already.
Yes, and there's a couple of these that are going to be new cards, and we'll let you know when we talk about them. But the first is Life Crafter's Bestiary. Which is a card I used to great effect in a Game Nights episode with my Merfolk deck. It's a 3 mana artifact, and it says, at the beginning of your upkeep, scry 1, and whenever you cast a creature spell, you may pay a green mana. If you do, draw a card.
Sweet.
Ooh, very, very sweet. So you're getting scry value every single turn, and whenever you cast a creature spell, again, you're just casting it, you can pay a green, and if you do, draw a card.
So the interesting thing about mutate is that it does say you're casting the spell. It says if you cast the spell for its mutate cost.
Right, and so it even is a creature spell.
So even if you mutate, you can draw a card off Lifecrafter's Bestiary. So that's pretty cool. Another one in a similar vein is Beast Whisperer, 2 green for a 2/3 elf druid. Whenever you cast a creature spell, draw a card, just straight up.
I realize that it might be Bestiary, not Bestiary.
It's Bestiary.
Is it?
Yep.
Okay. Well, it's the best card in this deck.
Yeah.
So Beast Whisperer.
Bestiary is like a codex of all the different beasts out
there.
Oh,
it's like a Pokedex.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, next up is Deadly Rollick. This is a new card from the set. And this is, again, in a cycle of cards that Josh and I consider to be extremely powerful.
Oh, this cycle is nuts.
Yeah, it's 3 in a black for an instant. If you control a commander, you may cast this spell without paying its mana cost.
It's for 0!
Exile target creature. Instant exile. Speed, exile target creature if you control a commander. So this, obviously, this is not your commander because you can do this with a partner commander. So if you control a commander, wow. Actually, if you steal a commander, does that count? Someone else's commander?
Yeah, it says a commander.
Yeah, that's pretty nuts. You can steal someone else's commander and then you cast this card for free.
Exile. This is better than Path to Exile. It's better than Swords to Plowshares. Again, you do have to meet a criteria, but having your commander out is not a criteria that's hard for most decks to meet.
Yeah, and after
in black,
that, it's
exile?
Just, yeah, 3 in the black after that, too, if you don't even get to do that. It's still like a decent cost for an exile effect.
The blue one's a force of negation. Like, this whole cycle is nuts. We're going to talk about it in the set review.
I think the green one might be the only one I'm not hot on.
It's, yeah, but it's still good. I think it's still playable.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, hey, green doesn't need a lot of help, actually. All right, the next best card in the deck is Cold-Eyed Selkie, 1 and then a 2 hybrid Simic. So either 1 green, 1 blue, or 1 green-blue. 3 mana total for a 1-1 Merfolk Rogue, has Island Walk. Whenever Cold-Eyed Selkie deals combat damage to a player, you may draw that many cards.
Oh, well, it's just 1 damage, Josh. Why is this card so good?
Yeah, this is nuts because it's you play it on 3, and then on 4, you mutate Otrimi onto this thing, and it's actually a 6-6 with Trample and Island Walk that you swing in and draw 6 cards
You're
with.
You're probably going to draw some cards off it. Yeah. Cold-Eyed Selkie is one of my favorite cards in a deck like Rafik because it's all about pumping that power up.
Are we going to mention this in the other part? I'll mention it now. It's worth noting that when a card says something like, whenever Cold-Eyed Selkie deals combat damage to a player, what that actually reads in Magic parlance is, whenever this card deals combat damage to a player, it's referring to itself.
Right. It's not saying the name Cold-Eyed Selkie, it's this card.
Yeah, so even if you put Otrimi on top of the Cold-Eyed Selkie, that text will still refer to itself, and you'll still draw the 6 cards.
Yep. All right, next is a new card from Ikoria. It's the Sawtusk Demolisher. It's 4 green green for a 6/6 creature beast. However, you can mutate it for 3 and a green. It has trample, and it says whenever this creature mutates, destroy target non-creature permanent. Its controller creates a 3/3 green beast creature token. So for 4 mana, you basically get a beast within something and mutate it onto another creature, and you make a 6/6 trampler. And if you mutate again onto that, then you do it again. And every single time you mutate onto this creature or it mutates, boom, something else blows up.
Yeah, it's Terastodon-y.
Yeah, repeatable. For cheaper. Sounds good to me.
Yeah, pretty cool. The next one's also a new card. It's Trumpeting Gnar. It's 1 green and a blue for a 3/3 beast. Has mutates for 3 and then 2 hybrid Simic. So 5 mana to mutate. It says whenever this creature mutates, you create a 3/3 green beast creature token. So it's whenever it mutates, you can mutate onto it, right? So you can cast this for 3, mutate Otrimi on turn 4. That'll be a 6/6 trample. And you'll make a 3/3.
Yeah, a lot of the power of this card is the fact that it comes down on 3 and you want to mutate onto it. So if this is just a play you do every game, you're getting 9 power on turn 4. And
that's
you can
nuts.
Swing with it with yeah. trample. So that's really, really powerful.
Yeah, that's the other thing we didn't talk about with mutate. Again, I don't know. We're about to... Okay, anyway.
We're going to dive deep into mutate in a second.
Yeah, but you kind of get haste a little bit, right? Because if you play Cold-Eyed Selkie on turn 3, then on turn 4 you cast Otrimi mutating it onto Cold-Eyed Selkie. The Cold-Eyed Selkie was already on the battlefield, so it's not a new creature.
Mm-hmm.
It's just been altered, and so it can swing right now.
Yeah.
So that's a 6/6 trample haste, basically, Island Walk.
Yeah, you can almost look at Mutate a little bit similar to what an Enchantment Aura does. It's not going to restrict the fact that the creature is just buffed up. It's turning into something else, but it's still the same card.
Pretty interesting. Okay, and this last card in this deck and in the pre-con environment...
Probably not great.
Not crazy, but... Seems really, really good in the overall world of Commander. It's Manascape Refractor, 3 mana for an artifact. It enters the battlefield tapped, but it says it has all activated abilities of all lands on the battlefield.
All lands. What?
And then you may spend mana as though it were mana of any color to pay activation costs of Manascape Refractor's abilities. So it has all the abilities of all the lands, and also, oh, by the way, if those lands require you to pay colored mana that you don't have, you can just pay any kind of mana for that.
Yeah, Manascape Refractor is kind of crazy in a lot of ways. It is almost like the Nicol Bolas of lands in the newest
one,
because it takes all the Planeswalker abilities. This one takes every single land's ability. So you have Maya Hollow, now you are able to regenerate creatures. You can now have even the Strip Mine effect, right?
Yep.
You can pretty much have anyone's land.
You get it all at once, too, is the thing. It stacks them all up.
Yeah, if you have a way to untap this, then great. You can just use that land the same turn. This seems like a great card in your Tim deck, maybe, Josh.
Yep. It copies your own lands, so this is a card that you can break.
Yeah,
for
100%.
Sure. Yeah.
And if it's not broken, then everyone's going to be like, wait, you get that effect now? Whoa, 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 whoa.
I don't know if I want to play my Maze of It then.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, very, very cool. Okay, those were the best cards of the deck. We're going to go into a deep dive here on Mutate as a mechanic, because it's actually a lot more complicated than it looks on the surface. We consulted with the head rules person, Eli Schifrin, at Wizards about a lot of questions we had. So we're going to get up to speed on that, and then we're going to do everybody's favorite, add 10 cards, take out 10 cards, buff this deck up as quickly and cheaply as possible. But before we do all that, we're going to take a quick break and hear a message from our sponsors.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
All right, we are back and we are talking about the Sultai Mutate deck from the Commander Precons this year from Ikoria. This one is special because it has a main set mechanic in it and they buffed it up with some new cards as well. And Mutate itself is a little more complicated than it looks on the surface.
A lot more.
It's not just about making one big monster, crazy, cool creature, but it is about that, but it's, there's a lot of interactions here because once you create that thing, this is the first time we've ever seen a creature sitting on top or below another one and mutating together in a main set. How exactly does this work with all sorts of different effects? Well, one thing I will say that is if you are mutating onto a card with the card where it's unblockable, hexproof, or indestructible, it's going to be a good card to mutate onto because obviously you're making a bigger, crazier, stronger creature and you're making it harder to interact with.
Yeah, it gets all the keywords of all the cards that are stacked there. Again, you can mutate onto something more than once too, so yes. You can start getting a ton of different abilities. If it had +1/+1 counters or gains them, the whole thing has +1/+1 counters. They don't go away or change when you mutate. Mutates really like this build your own monster mechanic, but there are, of course, where Magic players were tricky. We think of all these corner cases and there are crazy things you can do. So let's talk about some of the other things that you might mutate onto and how that's going to work. So Undying and Persist.
Right. So Undying is a mechanic that says when a creature with Undying dies, if it had no +1/+1 counters on it, return it to the battlefield under its owner's control with a +1/+1 counter on it. And Persist is a mechanic that says when this creature dies, if it had no -1/-1 counters on it, return it to the battlefield under its owner's control with a -1/-1 counter on it.
So let's imagine you have a creature with Persist and then you mutate onto it twice.
Yep, let's say it's Glendalendra Archmage, everyone's favorite.
Okay, so I mutate onto it a couple of times, and now it dies. What happens with that creature?
Well, it said Persist on the creature, and all of the creatures that died had Persist on it, thus they all get a Persist trigger.
Now, they don't come back stacked on top of each other, they actually come back into the battlefield separately.
Whoa!
So you would basically take that creature, and now it's three creatures
and they all persist and they get the -1/-1 counter because you can't, they don't come back at the same creature because when you mutate, you are casting it as a mutate to like slap a monster on top of another one. If they're coming back from the graveyard, they are basically separate cards at that point. But they all had Persist on them because they all three of them together had it when they died.
Now, I know what you're thinking out there. What if I can get Persist and Undying on the same creature? It doesn't really work because one trigger resolves and then the other trigger, it's not in the graveyard anymore. So you have to do your +1/-1 counter shenanigans a different way.
Yep.
Okay, so let's say I've persisted the same creature, you know, Glendalendra, two mutates on it, and then I blink that card somehow. So I use rune, and I exile it, and it comes back.
Oh, nice. Good job.
Yeah.
You got rid of the counters, right?
No. Before it's died.
Oh, before it's died.
Yeah. All three of those creatures will come in separately.
Correct.
Back, right?
Yes.
So you've got one creature with three cards stacked on it. You blink it, now they come back, boom, you've got three separate creatures. This is good because a lot of times the mutate creatures are big, but their mutate cost is cheaper. So look at Otrimi, costs six if you just want to cast it as a 6/6 trample with its ability. But mutate is only 4 mana.
Yeah.
Because mutate's just a little bit worse because you don't actually get the extra power and toughness, right? If you mutate onto a 3/3,
it becomes a 6/6 in Otrimi's
case. You didn't actually put six power onto
the
board.
Yeah, it's not 9 total. You're not adding it up. So
Blink is a good way to kind of like, oh, I cast all these things for cheaper because of Mutate.
Yeah.
Blink it. Now they're all separated.
It's kind of like one of those Power Ranger things at the end when they all join the different parts together. Yeah. And like it gets hit by a huge thing and all the Power Rangers fly off separately. It's not like they all disappear. They just become their separate little vehicles.
Right. So Blink's pretty cool.
Yep. Exiling as well. So let's say you like cast an Oblivion Ring. It exiles another target, non-land permanent. But when O-Ring leaves the battlefield, return the exile card under the battlefield under its owner's control. Well, guess what? They come back separately as well. Same idea. They all get exiled at the same time, but when they leave, they're all different cards. They're not mutated onto each other.
In a real corner case, you know, Karn, how he kind of starts up a new game with
the exile
cards. Restart
the game, leaving an exile, yeah. All non-aura permanents exile with Karn. Then put those cards onto the battlefield under control. What happens?
They would be separate. Because once they're in exile and they come back in any way, they're not going to restack mutate. They're just going to come back on their own.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Please let me know if you ever do
that. The Karn thing. Yeah.
Because one, don't do the Karn thing.
Yeah. That's what I mean. Whoever's done it, they're not doing it again because it's a pain in the butt.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. We talked about counters. So +1/+1 counters will stay. So like Thrun, the Lonely King, if you kick it.
Grun. Yeah. If you kick it.
Oh, Grun. Sorry. Yeah. Thrun is the other one.
Yeah, Thrun, the last troll.
Yeah, or sorry. Grun, the Lonely King. If you kick it, it comes in with a bunch of +1/+1 counters. And then if you
mutate on top of it,
you can still say, hey, it's the 6/6 base, mm-hmm. and now it has 5+1/+1 counters or whatever.
Yep.
And it's 11/11. So.
And then again, it says whenever Grun attacks alone, it's referencing itself. So if you have Otremi on top of Grun and you attack with it, it still counts as itself, and you're going to double the counters and, double its power and toughness until end of turn.
Pretty cool. All right, here's a pretty interesting one.
Yes.
So the gods, especially like the gods from Amonkhet, they have this rider clause that says when it dies, you return it to its owner's hand at the beginning of the next end step. So if you mutate onto, let's say, the Scarab God, which is in these colors, let's say you mutate onto it twice,
mm-hmm.
and it gets killed, it goes to the graveyard, all three of those cards will come back to your hand at the beginning of the next end step.
The text on all of them, because they're all one card, says, when this card dies, return it to its owner's hand at the beginning of the next end step.
Yep. So they're all like, well, I died. I'm coming back to the hand.
Hooray!
That's pretty crazy.
That's very crazy because, again, you're giving very prime targets for removal. So that makes that God's effect that much better because, boom, those cards are coming back. You get to recast them or remutate.
The CMC is the CMC of the topmost creature.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an interesting thing. It doesn't combine all the CMCs. So again, Otremi, if it's on top, will be a 6 CMC creature, regardless of if there's 5 mutates below it.
Yeah.
So that... Okay, this next one's...
This might be the most complicated part.
It's weird.
Right? So let's take a look at a card like Vesuvan Doppelganger. It's 3 BBB for a creature shapeshifter, 0/0, one of the first clones ever printed. You may have this card enter the battlefield as a copy of any creature on the battlefield, except it doesn't copy that creature's color and has. At the beginning of your upkeep, you may have this creature become a copy of target creature, except it doesn't copy that creature's color and has this ability. So this is a card that can continually change copies.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I'm this. And then your next turn, it goes, never mind, I'm that thing over there.
So what's going to happen to the cards under it? If you mutate onto a Vesuvan Doppelganger, it's going to have the trample ability of Otremi, let's say, and everything underneath. What happens when this looks at something else and says, I want to become a copy of you?
So... what happens is it actually overwrites all of the current abilities and only gets the new thing. So don't do that.
Yeah, don't do that.
Unless there's something awesome, like somebody puts out Blightsteel, then maybe you do it. So yeah, it's a copy of something. You mutate onto it, mutate again. So now it's got whatever its first abilities were, plus Otremi's abilities, plus another mutate ability, mm-hmm. right? So it's got like a bunch of abilities, and maybe it's like a 6/6 because Otremi's on top. And then your next upkeep, you're like, someone played a Blightsteel Colossus. If you change into the Blightsteel, it would seem like only the Vesuvan Doppelganger part
right.
would change into it, and you'd still have Otremi's ability and the other mutate card, but you don't. It overwrites all of them.
Yeah, it says you may have this creature become a copy of target creature, and this creature includes all the cards that have been mutated on top of it, so it just loses all of it.
It would lose all the power and toughness and everything too, right?
If it had Undying or Persist, it wouldn't get those triggers as well, so that's something you should not be doing, something you should be worried about.
I mean, if it's a Blightsteel, maybe you do it.
Yeah, I mean, you still got Trample, right?
Yeah, exactly. So that's a super weird corner case. There is another corner case, and I don't actually understand it very well, so I'm... It's morph.
Right.
So mutating onto morph creatures, whether they're face up or not, it gets really weird. So you should check with a judge or rules expert, or I think Eli said he was going to release a primer, an FAQ or something. So
had to be a mutant.
We're not going to cover that one because it's a little bit weird. But anyway, you know, morph cards also interact weirdly. So mutate as a mechanic, kind of nuts. Like
really,
lots of weird,
really cool.
Yeah, lots of weird corner cases. Definitely when you look at it for the first time, you think, oh, this is pretty straightforward. And then you start getting into it. So having said all of this, we're going to go into the next section, which is cards to add to this deck. Remember, our total budget for this exercise is $25. around. You know, we might go a little over, a little under, but
yeah,
we'll try and stay there.
Now, there is a special case about this deck. Again, there are a lot of cards in the main set that are not included here, and there are some cards that are mythic rarity, some really powerful stuff. However, we're not going to include these in the 10 cards in and out because we don't know the prices of those cards. We don't know what they're going to settle at. So it would be really dumb if we're like, and put this card in, but it ends up being a very
$30
Pioneer or, you know, like standard playable card and jumps up in price. So we're actually just going to leave that for a smaller list at the end, and we'll mention them. And should you open them in a booster pack, maybe at your pre-release events, you can slot them into this deck if you're going for that.
Yeah, I'm sure it's, I mean, safe to say you're going to want to put some more mutate cards in here. Okay, so let's talk about the first category of cards to add, which we're calling high value targets.
Yep.
These are targets that you want to mutate onto. Something to keep in mind here is that cards that are 3 CMC or less are preferable because you will always have Otremi in your command zone and therefore always mutate onto it for 4 mana, which means your turn 4 play
is big.
Is big, and as long as you cast a creature that's a non-human before turn 4, then you're going to be in a really good spot with a lot of these cards. So let's talk about some of this stuff.
Yep. So this card is actually really similar to Cold-Eyed Selkie in terms of its ability.
So mean.
This card is mean. It's, again, another staple in the Rafik of the mini deck. It's Cephalid Constable. 1 blue, blue, creature Cephalid Wizard, 1/1. You know what it shares a mana cost with? Capsize.
Yeah.
So whenever Cephalid Constable deals combat damage to a player, return up to that many target permanents that player controls to their owner's hand.
So imagine, if you will,
Dreamlined.
It's turn 4. Jimmy mutates onto a Cephalid Constable.
With Otremi, the ever playful.
It's turn 4. You've played a Mana Rock. You played a Cultivate on your turn. Maybe it's your turn 3. He went first or before you. You played a Cultivate on your turn 3, so you've got 4 mana tapped in play.
You're feeling good about your turn.
He swings at you.
With a 6-6 Trampler.
He bounces everything.
Every single card you played back to your hand.
Dear lands.
And he actually has 2 more bounces he could have used.
I don't know why I'm still talking like this. Yeah, this card is crazy.
Yeah.
If you're playing against an Otremi deck and they turn 3 Cephalid Constable, oh my lord, you better hope you have Deadly Rollick in your hand and your commander out.
They basically can choose any player to lose the game at that point, yeah. Right?
And it doesn't cost them a lot because they still have a 6-6 with Trample that's going to do that to another player if they don't answer.
How many times does someone tap out on turn 3 or 4? Really often. Those are the turns where you feel generally very safe. And that's
Your Mana Rocks. You're just setting up.
Yeah, and that's when the Otremi can really get you. In this case, it is probably one of the meanest things you can do with this deck is play a card like Cephalid Constable, but it's very powerful.
All the next few cards are along a similar line. I want to say Cephalid Constable is also only 50 cents, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Thada Adel has the same casting costs as Cephalid Constable.
And has Island Walk.
Yeah. You want
to
read it?
Yeah, so it's a 2-2. Whenever Thada Adel deals combat damage to one player, search that player's library for an artifact card and exile it. Then that player shuffles their library until end of turn, you may play that card. So this means that, boom, you can get something cool out of their deck. You can also strip their deck of a Blightsteel if you know that's sort of their win condition.
Thought Ideal is just known as the Soul Ring Stealer.
Yeah, it's still
Mana
Soul Rings.
Crypts, really, yeah, really good.
Actually, that's great. That's true because you can play that card until end of turn. So getting a Mana Crypt and also doing someone up to 6 damage. Island Walk, by the way, now you have an Island Walk Trampler. Seems pretty good. There's a couple other cards, again, that sort of fit with this. So Virtus the Veiled is a 3 mana, 2 in the black for a 1-1. When it deals combat damage to a player, that player loses half their life, rounded up.
That's a, by the way, you get hit for 6, you go to 34, and then you lose 17. So you go to 20, no, you go to 17?
Yeah.
That's turn 4.
That's a lot of damage.
Virtus is mean too.
And the last one is interesting. It's Chilling Apparition. It's 2 in the black for a 1-1, and it has a really important line of text on here for mutate cards, which is black regenerate Chilling Apparition. And whenever Chilling Apparition deals combat damage to a player, that player discards a card. This is just a good card to have because it's going to always be a good mutate target because it protects itself.
And just the fact that turn 3 you play it, turn 4, Otremi, attack, make somebody discard a card that's big that early in the game, and now you've got a safe mutate creature that's pretty safe, right? You're going to be able to regenerate it. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
This last one's pretty nuts, and it's going to cause us to talk about one more rules thing that we didn't talk about in the deep dive on mutate earlier. It's called Mist Syndicate Naga. It is 2 in a blue for a 3-1 Naga Ninja. Remember, these can't be humans.
Right. Which means non-human for mutating.
Guys, I got real excited about Dream Stealer, but that actually won't work, which is good because Dream Stealer's mean. Anyway,
it's okay. You have Cephalid Constable instead.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, again, 2 in a blue, so 3 mana for 3-1. Has Ninjutsu for 2 in a blue. If you watch the latest Game Night's episode, you understand ninjutsu. You can return an unblocked attacker you control your hand and put this card onto the battlefield from your hand, tapped and attacking. That is a way to get mutate cards back in your hand if you need some. But it says, whenever Miss Syndicate Naga deals combat damage to a player, create a token that's a copy of Mist Syndicate Naga.
Oh, well.
We didn't talk about copies as they pertain to mutate, but here's where we find out how broken copying mutate creatures can be, because the copy will copy the whole mutation.
The whole darn thing.
So if you've mutated onto Mist Syndicate Naga with two mutate creatures, and let's say it's a 6-6 with trample that also says, whenever you mutate onto it, you make a 3-3. Then you'll make a copy of a 6-6 with trample that says whenever you mutate onto it, you make a 3-3. And it'll also be a Miss Syndicate Naga, so it'll also say whenever this deals combat damage to a player, make a copy of it.
So you're just going to keep making more and more and more. However, it is going to be a legendary creature if you put Otrimi onto it, so you shouldn't do it with legendary creatures because the copy itself will do the legendary rule. But you could also put Otrimi underneath the Miss Syndicate Saga.
So that it's not the Otrimi, it's a Miss Syndicate
Saga with trample and the text.
But it won't. It'll be a 3-1, not a 6-6. Yeah. But copying mutate creatures... It's a good point about legendary, but if you could get three or four onto a creature and make copies of it, that is a definitely scary thing you can do.
Yeah, that's a lot. This makes Miss Syndicate Saga a very high-value copy target or mutate target.
Now, we're going to count everything we just said as like three cards because you don't need all of them, or maybe you do, but
yeah.
We're just saying you want some high-value targets that cost three CMC or less.
Okay. Next up, we have Copy, Blink, and Bounce is this name of the category here. And this card is actually one that got a lot of attention recently because it's the Year of the Rat.
Mm-hmm.
And the Secret Lair was just about this, but it's Pack Rat. And if you guys were listening to what we said about Miss Syndicate Saga, you may understand Naga, you may understand where we're going with this one. One in the black for a creature rat that's a star. Pack Rat's power and toughness are each equal to the number of rats you control. Not really relevant when you turn it into something massive. And for two in the black, discard a card to create a token that's a copy of Pack Rat. Pack Rat's one of those cards that has been known to just win games because it's incredibly hard to remove. You just keep making more and more, and they keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So this might actually be, if you have the plans to do it, a card you mutate underneath. But I think in general, you're going to mutate on top because for two in the black, you get to make another copy of your giant mutate.
Yep.
You don't need to attack anyone. You don't need to do combat damage. You can just discard the card, protect it, make another one, and you are off to the races, my friends.
Yeah, if you ever get like two mutates onto Pack Rat, that's nuts.
Yeah.
Because you're basically paying two in a black and getting three cards worth of value for your one discarded card, right?
Whew.
Yeah, pretty cool.
I'm down.
Another one that's in a similar vein is Progenitor Mimic. It is four green and a blue for a 0/0 shapeshifter, but it says you may have Progenitor Mimic enter the battlefield as a copy of any creature on the battlefield, except it has, at the beginning of your upkeep, if this creature isn't a token, create a token that's a copy of this creature. So it'll just every turn keep popping out another copy of your mutate thing.
And this is nice too because you don't need to mutate onto the Progenitor Mimic. You can already have a mutate creature going nuts on the battlefield. You play a Progenitor Mimic and boom, now you have something that's going to keep creating copies of that thing.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Pretty cool.
Another one is just a very efficient clone.
Yeah, potentially one of the most efficient clones I think ever printed. It's Phantasmal Image, one in the blue for a creature illusion 0/0. And you can just have this enter the battlefield as a copy of any creature, except it's an illusion in addition to its other types. And it has, when this creature becomes the target of a spell or ability, sacrifice it. But this might be one of those things where it's just like, play this, and boom, you have enough power to do something crazy, or you have enough effects now to do something nuts, and for the lowly cost of two mana.
And, you know, the fact that mutate, it works kind of like an aura and an equipment, but clone allows you to clone the whole dang thing, right? We don't have a thing that says like, hey, if there are four auras on that, make a copy of it plus with all the auras are on it.
Yeah.
But that's kind of what clone does with mutate, so it's pretty cool.
Yeah, clone effects are actually very, very good in this type of deck. This next one is a card we always talk about. It's great because it gives you a lot of protection and lots of flexibility. It's Temur Sabertooth, two green for a creature cat, 4/3, and you can pay one in a green to return another creature you control to its owner's hand. If you do, Temur Sabertooth gains indestructible until end of turn. Now, you can mutate onto the Temur Sabertooth because that one in the green ability to make it indestructible is actually really relevant. But this is also like a, hey, I really wish I didn't mutate my Otrimi onto this thing. I want to put on something else.
Also, just to get a trigger,
yeah,
like, you know, Trumpeting Gnar and the Sawtusk Demolisher we talked about earlier, they want to be mutated onto. So maybe you're like, oh, I mutated onto this, but I want a mutate trigger, so I'm going to bounce it back to my hand, put some mutate card in my hand, now I can cast it.
Yeah, and just keep that engine going.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, as we look at this deck and as we talk about Voltron decks and mutate decks in general, the big weakness, again, is if someone removes your crazy good stuff.
Because they get like four cards for one card.
Yeah, so having regenerate, having bounce effects is really, really powerful.
The next one is Aetherling. It's 4 blue-blue for a shapeshifter. It's a 4/5. It has 4 activated abilities. I'm going to read them out of order just because it's more dramatic. You can pay 1 and give it +1/-1, or you can pay 1 and give it -1/+1 until end of turn. You can pay blue, and it says Aetherling can't be blocked this turn.
I like that.
Yep. And then the real one, you can pay a blue and exile Aetherling, return it to the battlefield under its owner's control at the beginning of the next end step.
Ooh, that is spicy.
Right.
So again, if it's mutated with a bunch of cards onto it, guess what it comes back as? All of them.
Yep, all those cards come back separately. Also protects it, right? You can mutate a bunch of things onto it, swing around with it, just being like, whatever, deal with this thing. And as soon as you do, I'm actually going to blink it out and it'll become all the things separately.
Yeah, so it's a great way to turn your board that looks not that threatening into all of a sudden a giant army that's coming at you. Endling is another card that was printed recently in Modern Horizons. That's basically the black version of Aetherling. It's 2 black-black for a 3/3 zombie shapeshifter. Again, keep in mind that the fact that these are not humans makes a big difference here. And for black, Endling can gain menace until end of turn. For black, Endling gains death touch until end of turn. And again, I'll read this out of order. Black, and you can pay 1 to give it +1/-1 or -1/+1 until end of turn. So they actually combine two abilities together. And for the last most impactful one, black, Endling gains undying until end of turn. So again, if it dies, if it has no +1/+1 counters on it, it comes back to the battlefield with a +1/+1 counter on it. Every one of those creatures that's mutated onto are going to come back separately with a +1/+1 counter.
Yeah, that's just awesome because, again, it just protects it. You feel safe putting all your mutates on that. You get all the other abilities and to use them, and somebody's like, ugh, if I take care of that thing, it just gets worse for me.
Yeah, totally. And then, of course, we have a line of text in here.
This is my favorite part of the whole outline. It just says, *, Craig recommends Blighted Agent.
50 cents, *. It's like, how did he get access to this outline to infect it?
I think Craig's wrong here. This is a human rogue.
Oh, sorry, Craig.
Sorry, Craig.
But you know what? There are a bunch of other infect creatures, yeah. Maybe you just want to have Blighted Agent.
Craig's
anyway.
Like, I'm not wrong. Blighted Agent's just awesome.
It's
it
just
doesn't
good.
Have anything to do with anything
else
in the deck. What are you guys talking about?
Yeah, duh. Jeez. All right, let's talk about some utility creatures, things that make this deck hum a little bit more. There's Goreclaw, Terror of Khalsyzma. 3 and a green for a legendary creature bear. It's a 4/3. Creature spells you cast with power 4 or greater cost 2 less to cast. This includes their mutate cost.
Again, and mutate says, if you cast this spell for its mutate cost.
Yeah, so Otrimi all of a sudden becomes just Sultai to cast it if you have Goreclaw out. And whenever Goreclaw attacks, each creature you control with power 4 or greater gets +1/+1 and gains trample until end of turn. So it's a good card to also mutate onto. It gets really, really buff. And it makes all of your big spells in this deck cost less, which is important because, again, a lot of the mutate costs are up there.
Yeah. Even like Sawtusk Demolisher becomes 1 and a green to mutate. Oh. Like, that's just nuts.
That is very, very nuts. Yeah.
All right. The next one is Yeva, Nature's Herald. 2 green-green for a 4/4 that has flash and says you may cast green creature cards as though they had flash.
Yep. And just looking at our table of cards here, a lot of these cards are multicolored and green.
It's because Vedalken Auri is outside our budget range.
Yes. And of course, Return of the Wild Speaker is a card that we've mentioned a bunch on the show.
I'm just playing this card more and more.
It's an instant. That's what makes it so good. And it also says 2 very important words on here, which is non-human. So it's an instant. Choose one. Draw cards equal to the greatest power among non-human creatures you control. Or non-human creatures you control get +3/+3 until end of turn. So this is a finisher and a card draw card at the same time. You're going to have a bunch of non-humans, obviously, on the battlefield. They're going to be very big because they've been mutating and getting counters and all sorts of things.
If you pull out one of those cool Endling, Aetherling, make all the mutates jump off and become their own creatures, maybe you just win with it.
Yeah, and then you can also pump the Endling or Aetherling to draw more cards off it as well. Yep. So this is just a card that feels built for this kind of deck.
Yeah, if you're not playing Return of the Wild Speaker in some decks, I think you probably should try it out.
Indeed.
All right, so those are the 10 cards in, 10 cards out. Might be a few more or less than 10 because we cheated a little bit in there. But
Blighted Agent counts as a special 11.
A lot of cool stuff. And again, we are going to talk about some of the new cards from the main Ikoria set that you probably want to put in here because of the mutate mechanic. But before we do that, let's talk about the 10 cards that we would take out of the deck.
Yep, this one is a new one from the Commander set. It's Capricopian. X and a green for a Goat Hydra. Never seen one of those before. It's a 0/0 enters the battlefield with X +1/+1 counters on it, and for 2 mana, you can put a +1/+1 counter on this card. Then you may reselect which player Capricopian is attacking, and only the player Capricopian is attacking may activate this ability, and only during the declare attacker's step. So I own Capricopian, I swing at Josh. Josh goes, I'll pay 2 mana, put a +1/+1 counter on it, and redirect it towards Mel. Mel says, whoa, I'm going to pay 2 and redirect it towards Josh. And Josh is like, well, I don't have any mana left, so it's still attacking me. The problem with this card is, though, you can just redirect it towards someone with Death Touch, and they're going to be like, okay, yeah, I just block it.
Yeah,
like,
you can team up. Yeah.
So it leaves a little too much out of the player's hands, I think.
I'm going to do 4 at once here because this is like our 4th deck upgrade, and we're taking these out of all of them.
Yeah, every single one, yeah.
So it's Bonder's Ornament and the Impetus Cycle stuff. So Psychic Impetus, Parasitic Impetus, Predatory Impetus. There are 3 in this deck. These are the auras that goad a creature and then give some other ability. So supposedly you're supposed to be willing to play it on your own stuff or their stuff. There are a couple that are fine in certain decks, but in this one we're taking them all out. Bonder's Ornament is a bad mana rock that wants other people to play the same mana rock. Don't worry about it.
Not gonna
just
happen.
Take it out, yeah.
All right, the next up is a very pricey mutate card. It's Archipelago. Man, these names are going to kill
me. It's like Archipelago, but it's a gory one.
It's
Archipelago. That's actually clever.
Yeah, I like that. So it's a Leviathan, 5 blue for a 7/7. It has a mutate cost for 5 and a blue, so 1 less than its CMC. Whenever this creature mutates, tap up to X target creatures, where X is the number of times this creature has mutated, and those creatures don't untap during their controller's next untap step. I think this is great 1v1. This is a way clunkier in a multiplayer game, and not to mention, the one thing that you can't really count on is having a creature being mutated on to a bunch of times. It's just one of those things where it's like you're setting yourself up for really big removal if you're not careful. And like, what is this going to get you at most? 2 creatures tapped down?
Yeah.
Not worth
it. It's also like really expensive card. 7 yes. mana on its base and then 6 mana to mutate. So this is just a mulligan a lot of times. You just can't play this card for a really late into the game. So there's just better mutate creatures in the main set that you can replace this one with.
Yep.
All right, the next one is also a new card. It's called Boneyard Mycodrax. 2 and a black for a star fungus. Its power and toughness are equal to the number of other creature cards in your graveyard. And it has scavenge for 4 and a black. And scavenge means you exile this card from your graveyard, put a number of +1/+1 counters equal to this card's power onto target creature. You can only scavenge as a sorcery. So
I hate these kinds of cards. Anytime it says star based on something in your graveyard, I'm like, oh, don't draw this in turn 1.
Yeah, see, this is not going to even be playable on turn 3 because it'll just die because there's likely to be no other creature cards in your graveyard.
Mm-hmm.
In which case, you don't get that cool thing where you played a 3-drop and then played Otremia onto it and got, I just put a 3-drop in there that's guaranteed at least going to live.
Yeah.
Yeah, this card is just too many hoops for not enough upside.
This next card is an old card. It's Predator Ooze. It's green for a 1/1 creature ooze with indestructible. Whenever Predator Ooze attacks, put a +1/+1 counter on it. And whenever a creature dealt damage by Predator Ooze dies this turn, put a +1/+1 counter on Predator Ooze. Here's the thing. Getting green on turn 3 is not possible. I mean, it's possible, but it's very unlikely compared to just
it's very unlikely to be able to do that and then also be able to have Soul Tie available to you on 4.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So while this is a strong card, I think being indestructible and having all the right keywords, we found some other cards I think are better 3-drop replacements for this kind of thing.
Yeah, because you definitely don't, like, this card gets way worse when you're playing at turn 5, which is what you're looking at if you miss 3, because on 4 you want to Otremi.
Yep.
Yeah. The next one is Hungering Hydra. It's green and X for a 0/0 Hydra. It enters the battlefield with X 1/1 counters on it. It can't be blocked by more than one creature, and whenever Hungering Hydra is dealt damage, put that many +1/+1 counters on it. So this one is a little bit more borderline because you could play it on turn 3 as a 2/2 just to put Otremia onto, but it's just, since we're not going with Zexara, I think the X cards that aren't like really, really good are the ones you want to take out to make room for the stuff we talked about are more mutate cards. So you can just do better than this.
Yep. Same with this next one, Hero's Bane. It's a creature Hydra. It's a 0/0, enters the battlefield with 4 +1/+1 counters on it. And you can pay 2 green to put X +1/+1 counters on it, where X is its power. It's just a big dumb creature that gets bigger and dumber. I mean, scarier, I guess, not necessarily dumber. It's a big scary creature that gets bigger and scarier, but it requires a lot of mana. And again, you don't want to have targets that are going to be not good for removal. And at 5 mana, it's going to be pretty clunky to cast late in the game.
Yeah, I don't really want to mutate onto something that doesn't have either immediate upside. Like, this costs mana to get its upside. Whereas Cold-Eyed Selkie draws you 6 cards the turn that you mutate onto it. Or it doesn't protect it.
Yeah.
So I want it to have regenerate, give indestructible, persist undying, something like that.
Okay, let's talk about some of the cool cards from Ikoria, because there's only 15 mutant cards in this deck. I think you're actually going to need some more to flesh out the team, as well as find a good balance in terms of how you want this deck to play. So the first is a really interesting card. It's Brokos, Apex of Forever. It's two...
Apex of Forever?
Forever. I mean, yeah, I mean, why not?
Forever?
Forever? Brokos, Brokos, Brokos. It's two Insult Site for a 6/6 legendary creature Nightmare Beast. So this is also, by the way, a card that you could use as commander. We'll talk about more of this in the set review, of course. It's an elemental, a Nightmare Beast elemental, and it has mutate for two and then a hybrid blue-green.
It's hybrid blue-black. Hybrid,
sorry, hybrid green-black, green-green.
Blue-black.
Blue-black, sorry. So again, it's still, it's weird. You just need to look at the card.
It's green-green and a hybrid blue-black.
Yeah, thank you. It has trample, and it says you may cast Brokos from your graveyard using its mutate ability. So this is similar to Otremi in that it can always come back for the same cost over and over again, and it's just a big, chunky 6/6 trampler. Once mutate cards get into your graveyard, it's like bye-bye forever, but not with a card like Brokos. You can always keep mutating it, keep getting those triggers, keep triggering your creatures that want to get mutated onto. Seems very powerful.
Yeah, this is great in the deck because, like I said, I think you'll run into points where you're like, I need to be able to mutate.
Mm-hmm.
This will, like, as long as it's in the game, it's in your graveyard, it gives you a mutate.
Brings it back, yeah.
Yeah, something you can mutate
for the
with.
Same cost every time.
The next one is Dirge Bat. It's two black-black for a 4/4 creature bat. It has mutate for four black-black, which is weird. Usually mutate is less. It has flash and flying. Whenever this creature mutates, destroy target creature or planeswalker an opponent controls.
Ooh, that's nice.
So with even, flash.
Yeah, so you can do this incredibly quickly. You can mutate for six mana and blow something up.
So this is what I was talking about, too. Like, if you, on your end step, Dirge Bat, for its mutate cost onto something, and then goes to your turn, Brokos is in the graveyard. Oh, right. I just mutate onto that, destroy something else.
Yeah.
Pretty sweet. And then, I'll make a copy of it with Phantasmal Image. That doesn't mutate, obviously, but now you've got like something another that's like that flying, yeah. You know, whatever.
Even if you flash it in, let's say you don't have six mana available, you can still flash this in for four mana and then Brokos out of the graveyard or play your commander and mutate onto it. So it is still a 3/3 flyer for four, which can be the kind of thing that ends games too.
That's cool.
All right, Gem Razor is the next one up. It's three green for a 4/4 creature beast with mutate for less, one green-green. This creature has reach and trample, and whenever this creature mutates, destroy target artifact or enchantment an opponent controls.
Cheap mutate costs is really important to the deck to get you those triggers on those really good mutate, yeah. You know, when this creature mutates.
And when you mutate a card like this onto another creature that mutates, like if you do Gem Razor onto a Dirge Bat,
oh, you'll
you're blowing
get
up so much stuff.
And a thing. And if you mutate again, you destroy another enchantment and a thing. Oh, yeah. Pretty sweet. The next one is Parcel Beast. Two green blue for a 2/4 creature elemental beast. Has mutate for green, blue, and one.
No, green and blue, sorry.
Oh, sorry. Has mutate for green and blue. And then you can pay one and tap it to look at the top card of your library. If it's a land card, you can put it onto the battlefield. If you don't put it onto the battlefield, you can put it onto your hand. Again, this is a cheap mutate. Two
it's green
mana.
And blue. Yeah. So, and this effect you can always use.
Yep. Pretty cool.
Pretty cheap, right? It's kind of the Thrasios thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Poliwag Symbiote is next. This creature might be the all-star in terms of it's also an uncommon, I believe. It's one in the blue for a 1/3 creature frog. Each creature spell cast costs one less to cast if it has mutate. Haha. And whenever you cast a creature spell, if it has mutate, draw a card, then discard a card.
And discarding, remember, really good with Otremi because if you discard a mutate card, you can get it back.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So this is, I think Poliwag Symbiote is the card that if, you know, again, we don't know the price of it, so we didn't include it here, but definitely put that in the mutate deck. It's too good.
There's a bunch of other cards from the set that you would consider just because they have mutate and whatever. Those are just the best ones. We're obviously not going to go over all of them. We'll talk about a bunch of cards when we get to the set reviews for both of these sets. All right, let's talk really briefly about how the deck plays. We've played these decks around the office a few times. Jimmy?
Big creatures, huge threats. People are going to not like what you're doing.
It just looks scary whenever you've got a card with three other cards stacked on it.
Yeah, and it's
even if you're like, hey, it's only a 4/4.
Yeah, it's like, holy moly. But here's the thing. It is really susceptible to removal. If you don't have like that blink effect or the way to protect it in your hand, or you haven't built your deck right, it's going to be a bit of a pain when someone removes your giant thing and then you've spent 20 mana, let's say, into this one creature and it's all gone at once.
Yeah, the really important thing I think to make this deck a lot better and more playable is to just mitigate that with every deck brewing choice you make.
Yeah.
Make sure you're going to get value right away with it and you're going to help it protect itself from getting removed.
Yeah. And curve out correctly. It's going to be really important to curve out.
All right, to the listeners, what do you think of the Sultai deck out there, everybody? What cards did we miss?
And I'm really interested to see as well what players do with the cards in the main set. So if there's any cards you think that are better than the ones we recommended from the main set, let us know as well.
And if you want to get a hold of any of those cards, or the cards we just talked about, or this pre-con deck, or any of the other pre-con decks, go to cardkingdom.com/commandzone. You can pre-order all of that stuff right now, or maybe just order it. We're not sure. No, it's going to be pre-order because everything got delayed until May 15th.
Here's the thing. You can still get an order in. We don't know... due to the current situation around the world, how timely the shipping is going to be. But I can say this much. When Card Kingdom can ship it, they will ship it to you immediately. It will get there. I'm willing to put, you know, my pride on the line. If you order from six different places, Card Kingdom is going to get to you first based on when they're able to start shipping again.
Yeah, they definitely are the fastest shippers in the business. Obviously, check on their website right now due to the COVID crisis and find out exactly what's going on. But they're going to be handling it as good as anybody can. So cardkingdom.com/commandzone.
And of course, as always, big thank you to Ultra Pro. If you see Ultra Pro products in store, what's remaining right there right now still supports our show if you help support them. And they've been a sponsor of Game Nights and all that stuff for a long time. We really are indebted to them for being such a great company to work with. And as well, keeping our play areas safe, clean, and protecting our cards from damage.
There are some really cool, I don't know if it's been revealed yet, like alternate art stuff for this set. I'm hoping that all that stuff still gets produced, manufactured, and shipped out there. I'm sure Ultra Pro will be the ones doing that because they usually do. So hopefully we can get deck boxes and sleeves with that stuff. Sorry to be cryptic, but I don't know what is known where at the time this video comes out. you'll know it when you see it.
Yeah, you'll know when you see it. All right, no end step on these videos. We've talked about a lot of them, and we're doing a bunch of videos. And plus, hey, Magic is the real end step here. We love Magic. Keep playing Magic.
All right, big thanks to our editing, graphics, and logistics team, which is Craig Blanchett, Ashlyn Rose, Lady Danger, Manson Lung, Alfred Estaca, Josh Murphy, Jake Boss, and Sam Waldo. Whew. The whole team just killing it here. They're working from home right now, but they are trying as hard as they can to make sure that we get all of this extra content out to you guys.
Yep, and they're staying safe. We hope you all stay safe out there as well. And as always, big thank you to Jeffrey Palmer, who does the Living Card animations behind us on set, as well as on Game Nights, and starts and ends our show at youtube.com/TheCommandZonePodcast. You can find Jeffrey at Living Cards MTG. I bet he's doing a lot more animations right now because he's got some more time at home, too.
That's true.
So we'll see.
All right, stay safe, everybody. Thanks for watching.
We'll see you next time.
Peace.
For your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.